everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Comic Source. I'm Jace. This episode is going to be a special episode talking about a lot of the news that came out of the New York Comic Con at the beginning of October 2015. I heard some people talking, saw some chatter online about there weren't any huge bombshells dropped, any news that kind of, I guess, really grabbed the attention of the comic world. You know, DC had a lot of news about Dark Knight, the Master Race, the third story in Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns trilogy. But it had already been announced at San Diego. Marvel had a few announcements, nothing earth-shattering. So I kind of tend to agree with that chatter. There wasn't anything that was like, totally mind-blowing. Still was a great show from what I heard. Like I said before, it's gotten to be really big. It definitely rivals San Diego in terms of attendance. I don't know if it's quite gotten to the point where it rivals San Diego in importance, though. There's still that tradition of San Diego being the biggest show of the year, and that still holds some weight. So I'm certainly not going to cover every single bit of news, but I'm going to talk about the things that caught my eye.
We're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
So the first item I'm going to mention is that Greg Capullo, the artist on Batman, a very successful run, pretty much been the number one selling comic for DC, and sometimes even the number one selling comic of all, month in and month out. You know, it's often number one. Ever since the New 52 started, Greg Capullo on art with Batman, Scott Snyder writing, book's been wildly successful. Well, Greg's going to be leaving the book, taking a little break after issue 51 to work on a creator-owned project with Mark Millar. And there's still talk of him bringing back his previously published creator-owned title, The Creech. Supposedly he wants to do that with Scott Snyder as the writer at some point. So we're not sure what this project is that he's going to be doing with Mark Millar. But hopefully for Batman fans, fans of this current run of Batman with Snyder and Capullo, the break's not going to be too long. It hasn't been announced exactly how many issues Capullo's going to miss, but he said he's definitely returning to the book. Over on the Valiant side of things, Valiant debuted the all-new Shadow Man design, and that's going to be appearing in print in Ninjak 10, which starts the Operation Deadside story arc. Art in that will be Doug Braithwaite and Matt Kent handling the writing duties on Ninjak ever since it relaunched. The design is actually by Clayton Henry. And once again, you can go check out the show notes for links to all these news items. Looking at the new design, it's very interesting. Definitely a departure from any Shadow Man design we've seen before. He almost looks like he's bound with these bluish ropes. I don't know if they're supposed to be like, you know, spirit-induced ropes or psychic ropes. We haven't seen Shadow Man for over a year in the Valiant universe. His title was probably the least well-performing title when Valiant relaunched, and then they brought in Peter Milligan to try to do like a soft reboot, and if anything, it was even worse than the Shadow Man iteration that had gone before. When they relaunched it, it was being written by Justin Jordan, and I didn't necessarily not enjoy it. It wasn't quite as exciting or dynamic as the other titles. I think a lot of people felt the same way, being that the other titles were just such high quality. And then when Jordan left the book and they brought in Peter Milligan and changed things around, then I think people, looking back with some perspective, realized that the Justin Jordan stuff really wasn't that bad, but this new Peter Milligan stuff was just terrible. So they relaunched it with a new number one, Shadow Man End Days, which was like a three-issue run with Milligan, and that changed around kind of the status quo of things, but it was not well-received at all, and that's the last we've seen of Shadow Man. So, like I said, he's going to be returning in Ninjak, and he's been trapped in the Deadside supposedly ever since we last saw him in Shadow Man End Time. So Where it goes from here, the reason for this new look, I guess we'll have to read and find out. Also in Valiant news, Valiant's going to be launching a new Archer and Armstrong series by written by Rafer Roberts, a relative newcomer, with art by David LaFuente. LaFuente recently signed an exclusive contract to do pencils for Valiant, and this new title is just going to be simply titled A&A. So kind of some big boots for Rafer Roberts to fill, because Fred Van Lente, the main writer on Archer and Armstrong since the relaunch, made that book very much a fan favorite over at Valiant. He kept kind of the fun, high adventure feel. Personally, I feel like there's nobody better in comics at writing kind of like alternate history. Fred Van Lente, a big history buff, would often use real events in history and give kind of a different take on how it could have happened. And the things that he mixed in, you know, the immortal brothers of Archer and Ivar Timewalker and Gilad the Eternal Warrior, you know, he'd mix in these ancient people in historic events, and the way he did it, it made you think, wow, it really could have happened that way. So, like I said, Rafer Roberts has some big shoes to fill. I do feel like David LaFuente's art does suit the Archer and Armstrong style very well. So I think that this this team could be very successful if it's done well. And that series is set to launch in March of 2016. Also in some Valiant news, we know that Bloodshot goes analog, so to speak, in the recent pages that were released at New York Comic Con, Bloodshot 10. The series continues to be written by Jeff Lemire. This is going to be a four-issue arc with art by Louis LaRosa. LaRosa, probably due to the detail and incredible rendering he puts into his pencils, has mostly done covers, especially for Valiant, over the last few years. It's been a long time since we've seen him do interiors. That being said, that's probably why he, this is a four-issue arc, and he started working on it so long ago. You know, we heard that Louis LaRosa, like right from the start of Bloodshot Reborn being launched, that Louis LaRosa was working on issue 10 already. So this is the arc. We now know what it is. The arc is actually going to be set in the future of the Valiant universe. And it's kind of an apocalyptic change. We know that some disaster has befallen Los Angeles because there's people residing in the remnants of Los Angeles. Bloodshot himself is now considered to be outdated with these nanites coursing through his system. And he's going to be taking on some marauders who I assume are going to be much more advanced than him. Thus the title, The Analog Man, which I assume Bloodshot is the analog man to the marauders' digital technology, I suppose you'd say. So Lemire continues to surprise me and continues to put out a very high quality story. I know he has long-term plans for Bloodshot. I didn't dislike Lemire. I wasn't a huge fan of his work either before he took over Bloodshot, who's always been one of my favorite Valiant characters. But the work he's done on Bloodshot, the deep characterization he's brought to the character, are just second to none. He really is doing a great job. So definitely look forward to this four-issue arc. Get a glimpse at the future of the Valiant universe, but not super far in the future, not the 4001 world of the Valiant universe that we've seen previously in Rye and also The Eternal Emperor, starring Gilad the Eternal Warrior. So, also at New York Comic Con, it was announced that Frank Miller is working on a new Sin City comic book. Supposedly, it's going to be a love story set against the backdrop of World War II. Again, I'm not a huge Frank Miller fan. Sometimes I feel his work is overrated. And his art over the years, much like Romita Jr.'s, to me, has gotten worse, not better. It's less clean than it used to be, more blocky. He certainly does a great job of setting mood, though I will give him credit for that. His art suits books that are noirish very, very well, and Sin City's, of course, certainly fits that category. So I know Sin City has a huge amount of fans out there, so I'm sure this book will do well in sales. Okay, the next bit of news I want to talk about is Marvel has announced their next crossover, I guess you'd say, after Secret Wars, if it ever ends. And it's going to be called Avengers Standoff. And they're kind of using this as also a celebration of, I guess you'd say, Captain America's 75th anniversary, because it's going to tie in with that. Interesting that it's going to be the 75th year of Captain America, but Sam Wilson is going to be Cap still. So I think that, or I easily could see Steve Rogers returning to the mantle. Perhaps the way he does it, or for some reason it'll cause a split among the Avengers. Not 100% sure, obviously. We don't know too much about Avengers Standoff, other than that it's going to be the next big crossover after Secret Wars is finished. So I guess we'll wait and see. One rumor we did hear was that perhaps it's going to be almost like a Civil War II, so to speak, which would make sense. With Captain America Civil War coming out next year, Marvel often takes cues from its cinematic universe, try to boost sales, try to get fans of those movies into the comic shops to pick up these books. So, again, it would make sense to see Steve Rogers return to the mantle of Captain America, and it would make sense for them to have a Civil War book on the stands at the time. So that's supposed to be coming in March from Nick Spencer on writing duties and Jesus Saez. What little we know, it's supposed to be set in an idyllic community called Pleasant Hill, and some deep, dark secret the Avengers find themselves in the middle of. So, again, keep your eyes peeled for that. Secret Wars should be done by then, by March. And hopefully they've learned their lesson from the lateness of Secret Wars, and they'll have this story in the box, in the can, so to speak, and they can roll it out. Of course, we don't even know if it's going to be a separate series or if it's just going to run through the Avengers books. So I guess time's going to tell on that one. Also wouldn't be hugely surprised to see the title change. And you know, Marvel's done that before. They'll start a series and it's called one thing, and then halfway through, or they'll start an event and it's called one thing, and then halfway through the event, they'll either tack on more, a bigger title to kind of give it more context, or just because the nature of the event has changed. So, you know, it could start off as Avengers Standoff and then end up as Avengers Standoff Civil War. So, I guess we'll see. Some other news coming out of New York Comic Con is from IDW. This was of particular interest to me, being that I'm such a huge ROM Space Knight fan. We know at San Diego Comic Con this last year, IDW announced that they had finally gotten the rights for ROM and Micronauts. And just to give everybody a quick refresher, these were licensed properties, toys that came out in the late 70s, and the powers that be at these toy companies wanted to boost sales on the toys, and for that reason they approached Marvel Comics. They licensed these two properties to Marvel to create a comic title for each one, one for ROM, one for Micronauts, in hopes of boosting the sales of the toys through just getting the word out to comic fans that these properties existed. So the extremely underrated writer Bill Mantlo created these incredibly complex worlds, deep with a lot of other characters and background for these two properties. And I'm not sure how long Micronauts ran, to be honest. I've never read a Micronauts comic. I'm actually planning on remedying that soon. On eBay, I bought a full run of Micronauts. I'm going to sit down and read it from start to finish. But I was a huge ROM fan. It's the first comic I ever picked up on a monthly basis. So for that reason, because Marvel held the rights to everything that was created other than the main characters, so for ROM, that meant the rights for ROM remained with Parker Brothers, that was eventually acquired by Hasbro. Marvel doesn't have the rights to that character and that likeness. They just have the rights to everything else that Mantlo created as work for hire for the company. Same thing with Micronauts. You know, the toy company, I want to say that it was Kenner, which of course Hasbro eventually acquired as well. So again, Hasbro had the rights to the main characters, but everything else, the world, the background, remain in the hands of Marvel. So for that reason, that's why we've never seen reprints of these, even though they're classic stories that have huge fan bases, because the rights were split. You know, you couldn't reprint all the ROM stuff because Marvel held half the rights and Hasbro held the other half. So Chris Ryle, editor-in-chief over at IDW, huge fan of ROM, a big Micronauts fan as well, I believe, has been working on getting the rights for ROM and Micronauts for a very, very, very long time. Finally was successful. That was announced at San Diego Comic-Con. Well, at New York Comic-Con, they announced the creative teams. So on Micronauts, we have a writer, Cullen Bunn, very prolific writer. I've met him and interviewed him a couple times. I'm a fan of his work. I think he's an excellent choice. And the art is going to be by David Baldione, who I am not familiar with, to be honest. On the other side of things, with ROM, we're going to have Chris Ryle, along with Christos Gage, who a lot of people know from the Buffy comics over at Dark Horse, and also he's one of the main writers on the Daredevil Netflix series. So clearly the guy has some writing chops. So those two are going to be co-writing ROM, and we're going to see David Messina and Paolo Villania on art duties for the new ROM. I checked out the art of both of these guys. It's absolutely gorgeous. I cannot wait. We haven't had any release dates for either of these titles, other than the 2016 that was on the original image we saw when IDW announced it at San Diego Comic-Con. So I'm hoping in a future episode to have Chris Ryle come on the show. And being that I've talked to him before, I've talked to Cullen Bunn, I've talked to Christos Gage, I have a relationship with these creators. Certainly if I see them at a show anytime soon, I'm going to be bugging them on what exactly we can expect and when we can expect it. Of course, it's entirely possible that they're still in the early stages of planning and plotting, and they don't even have a firm date yet themselves. But definitely some exciting times for fans of ROM and fans of the Micronauts. Like when I heard Christos Gage was involved, I was like, man, he's a really great writer. He has his creator-owned title called Avatar. I'm sorry, called Absolution, over at Avatar Press, that if you haven't picked up, I highly recommend it. It's a very, very good story. So, and I haven't seen the Daredevil series, but from all accounts, it's done very well. So, very strong writer, very, very excited that he's on this new ROM title. Speaking of Dark Horse, James Cameron at New York Comic Con. Now, this is James Cameron of Titanic and Avatar fame. There's going to actually be another trip to Pandora, and this time it's going to be in the pages of a Dark Horse comic. So the publisher announced a deal with 20th Century Fox and James Cameron's Lightstorm Entertainment to produce a series leading up to the three upcoming Avatar sequels. We know that's what James Cameron's working on right now. I think they're filming them all concurrently. I mean, Avatar just blew the pants off everybody when it came out. But I think due to the fact that it's been so long and we haven't, there's not a lot of news about it, that people have kind of forgotten how awesome it was. I think maybe that might be part of the reason why Cameron's filming all three sequels concurrently, so he can kind of roll out one after the other, so it doesn't lose any momentum. But in the meantime, he wants to kind of enrich the world he's created. And that's one of the cool things about comics. When you hear creators talk, you can do anything you want in the pages of comics, and it doesn't cost, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to produce these, you know, special effects. You know, you have a huge splash page that shows all these crazy, this crazy alien world with all this technology or explosions or what have you. Put something like that on screen. You know, it takes a lot of work, takes a lot of time. Do all the rendering and special effects and the filming of the original stuff and green screen and all that stuff. Comic, you just get an artist, you know, you tell him what you want, you know, he works on the page for a week or so, and boom, you have this incredibly spectacular image that tells a story, and it doesn't cost an arm and a leg the way it would to produce a movie. So I'm very excited to see that Dark Horse and James Cameron are going to be enriching the world of Avatar, and it's supposed to, like I said, lead into the next three films. So, fans of James Cameron and Avatar, you definitely should get out there and pick this up. Now, over at Image, there's been quite an upheaval lately with the Spawn title for the last year. We know that Todd McFarlane wanted to bring back Al Simmons, the original Spawn, and John Boy Myers was announced as the artist, and it was supposed to be, I think Paul Jenkins was supposed to be writing it, and then he left, or you know, maybe it was Pete Woods. Like, there's been so much upheaval, I can't even keep it all straight. It was John Boy Myers and one particular writer supposed to take Spawn in a new direction, Al Simmons returning, and then that writer left, and another writer came on. And I think, like I said, I think it was Woods, and then he left, and Jenkins came on, still with John Boy Myers. They put out a special, like Spawn Resurrection, I believe it was called, with the return of Al Simmons. And then, you know, these were still, plot-wise, it was still McFarlane, still his overall story. Now, we don't know why. I think Woods left. He talked about just creative differences. He didn't feel like it was a good environment. He was a good fit. So he left. Jenkins came in. We don't know why Jenkins has left now. But I guess McFarlane has decided that he's just going to do it himself. Because John Boy Myers now has left as well. So again, we're not sure, you know, what exactly is going on behind the scenes. It may be just that, you know, McFarlane didn't feel like what he saw in his head was translating directly onto the page. So he's decided that he is going to do it himself. But it's a lot to undertake for him, being that he's got this company to run, and his, you know, his, of course, his McFarlane Toys, which is hugely successful, and it's just really time consuming to be in that position of, you know, running your own company and still try to do the grind of a monthly book. So the person he's brought along to help is a penciler who's a little quicker than him, and they're actually going to be collaborating on the art. So sometimes it'll be, and I should say that person's Eric Larson. So sometimes it'll be Larson's pencils and layouts with McFarlane inking. Sometimes it'll be McFarlane's pencils and layouts with Larson inking. They're co-plotting, scripting together. I've never been a big, huge fan of Eric Larson's art. It's not terrible, but I'm not the fan that some people are. Obviously, like most people, I do enjoy Todd McFarlane's art. The fineness of his lines, the dynamic layouts he uses. So it'll be an interesting collaboration to see. It'll also be interesting to see if these two guys, you know, two of the Image founders, can keep a monthly schedule. And it certainly is exciting news. I do like the new direction that they're trying to take with Al Simmons returning as Spawn. And I would like to see the story continue and be fleshed out a little more. It sounds like they have a lot of ideas and their collaboration's going well. But again, it's just a matter of seeing if they can keep a monthly schedule. I mean, it's a lot easier for a starving artist who's coming up, who needs the exposure and needs the work. I think, to buckle down and doesn't necessarily have these other commitments taking his attention away from the books. Whereas, you know, these guys, they have other, you know, they don't need the money to the same extent that these up-and-coming artists do. You know, these guys aren't starving artists at this point. You know, they've made tons of money over at Image. So they don't necessarily have that as a motivation. Plus, they have all these other responsibilities. So I guess only time will tell. It certainly seems to be an intriguing possibility to have these guys do a long collaborative run on Spawn. Another one of my favorite creators, somebody I definitely consider a friend, is Van Jensen. He's got a couple of books coming out from Dark Horse. Now, he had mentioned this to me at Phoenix Comic Con this last year. Well, actually, he had mentioned it when last year, 2014, he had mentioned it to me about how when the new 52 branding was ending on the DC books, and one of the titles he was writing solo, Green Lantern Corps, was ending, I was like, man, I really hope that Van Jensen has a new title coming out, like when they do that soft reboot or relaunch or rebranding, whatever you want to call it, that they did after the move to Burbank. But when everything was announced, I didn't see his name, so I was pretty disappointed about that. And I mentioned it to him, and he said, oh, don't worry, you know, I've got a couple of irons in the fire. And then at Phoenix Comic Con this last year, because he had said to me that he thought maybe San Diego Comic Con would be an announcement, I saw him at Phoenix Comic Con about a month before San Diego, and he said, nah, Dark Horse has decided that the timing's not right. We're going to wait till October, New York Comic Con. So we finally have the news. He is going to be working on a creator-owned title over at Dark Horse, and it's going to be called Cryptocracy, and he's going to be working with Pete Woods on that, and we don't know much yet. We just know that the villain of this mini-story narrative he's going to be telling is kind of this shadowy organization, and the story's going to be told from the perspective of that shadowy organization. And it's supposed to be a science fiction based story with a lot of conspiracy theories in it. So I think Van Jensen is well suited to write a story like that, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. The other title that was announced, he's going to be working on in conjunction with Nate Powell, who most recently did the March graphic novels from Top Shelf that were dealing with the civil rights movement that were very well received. The second story that he's going to be working on is going to be called Two Dead. That's T-W-O, the number two. And definitely inspired by Van Jensen's work in real life as a crime reporter before he became a comic book writer. So overtones of civil rights battles, and I'm sure that's where the collaboration with Nate Powell comes in. But other than that, we don't really know what to expect. Like I said, with being that it's going to have some civil rights background or as a setting, civil rights movement as a setting, expected to be somewhat of a period piece. So we look forward to that. Like I said, Van Jensen, great writer. I'm sure that both those titles would be worth picking up. Next bit of news I'm going to mention has to do with another great writer, and that's Charles Soule. Now, a lot of people were very excited to hear that Charles Soule was going to be picking up the reins of Daredevil after Mark Waid left. But another title that he's writing that's really being well received is the Lando title over at Marvel from their Star Wars line. And he's working on that with Alex Malev, I believe, as the writer. Well, that was only a 4-issue series, so we know that Charles Soule writes 1,000 books a month, and so when one finishes, like Lando being only a limited, of course he has to replace it with something. Well, we know that that replacement is going to be an Obi-Wan and Anakin book, and he's going to be working on that with Marco Cecchetto, I believe is how you pronounce his name, Cecchetto, C-H-E-C-C-H-E-T-T-O, and this is going to be a 5-issue miniseries, and it's going to be with Obi-Wan mentoring young Anakin. Anakin's going to be about 13. So if you look at it where it fits in with the movie continuity, it would be between The Phantom Menace and the second movie, Attack of the Clones. So it's also going to have some flashback to some times that happened before when the comic is taking place, I guess you'd say. So I don't know if it'll flash back to Phantom Menace time or you know, it's filling in the ensuing years, because what was Anakin supposed to be about, like 5 or 6? So there's plenty of time that's happened between the end of Phantom Menace and the beginning of the series. So again, most likely beautiful Mark Brooks covers. This looks like a Mark Brooks image on the... Oh, no, it's Marco Cicchetto on the cover to Obi-Wan and Anakin number one. Yeah, awesome art for sure. So you can click on the link in the show notes and go check it out, the article from CBR with the image. So Charles Soule, definitely a huge fan of Star Wars, definitely has a love and passion for the universe. So it's good to see that he'll continue to write a title that's set in the Star Wars universe. Also over at Marvel, the Silver Surfer has big changes in store, according to writer Dan Slott. Supposedly, to mark the character's 50th anniversary in March of 2016, Slott and Mike Allred, the artist on Silver Surfer, are going to do something to change the character forever. And so much so, this is going to be such a profound change that anytime you describe the character to someone, you're going to have to mention it. Now, I was always a huge Silver Surfer fan growing up. The series that started in the late 80s and was a cornerstone of the cosmic corner of the Marvel Universe for such a long time. I followed that title for well over 100 issues until I kind of took a break from collecting. The only reason I'm not reading the current Silver Surfer title, even though I hear it's done very well, is because for me, Mike Allred's art is a deal breaker. I do not care for his art at all. It pulls me out of the story to the point where I cannot enjoy it. You know, if I'm a fan of a character and it's got good writers on it, or a good writer on it, and Dan Slott for me certainly falls into that category, I usually can ignore the art and just, you know, focus on the story. I mean, 9 times out of 10, probably 90 times out of 100, that's the case. Or 99 times out of 100, I should say. But unfortunately, Allred's art is just, and I'm not saying it's terrible art, it's just, I don't like it. I don't like the thick lines. I don't feel like the storytelling from panel to panel is any good. His figures feel very stiff to me, very static. It doesn't flow. I just do not care for the art. And so haven't been following along with the latest Silver Surfer title. From all accounts, it's done very well. But I have to say, with Allred and Slott collaborating on the title and making such a profound change, I am a bit worried because I'm not a fan of this current run. Again, perhaps it's just a bit of hyperbole. I'm sure Slott would have told you that what he was doing to Spider-Man was going to change the character forever when he got rid of Peter Parker and basically Doc Ock was the superior Spider-Man. We know that Peter Parker's back as Spider-Man now. Did that really change the character forever? Well, we do see some changes that happened because of the Superior Spider-Man title and Dr. Octopus being in control of Peter Parker's body. So perhaps you could say it changed it forever. I don't know. I guess it's kind of a wait-and-see thing. I certainly don't think Marvel would allow them to do something that would ruin the Silver Surfer. But yeah, I do worry a little bit about what this change could be. Let's see, the next bit of news I want to talk about is jumping back over to DC. There's going to be a new creative team on Batman Superman, and this isn't a permanent change, but Tom Taylor, whose work over at DC included the Injustice Gods Among Us title. That's kind of where he got his start over at DC. He's since moved on to other titles. He's writing a couple of titles for the all-new, all-different Marvel. But he's going to be swinging back to the other side of the street, so to speak, and going to be taking on Batman and Superman just for one arc. And he's going to be working with Birds of Prey artist Robson Rocha. And Yannick Paquette is going to be providing the covers. Now, Taylor kind of said it was a bit of a dream gig, even though it's only a short run on the title. It's very exciting. It's kind of interesting. I mean, he had a chance to write Superman and Batman before. I'm sure that's what he means by the fact that it's a dream gig. But, of course, the version of Superman and Batman that he was writing was kind of an Elseworlds or alternate reality take on the characters, since it was in the world of Injustice. So we don't really know much more than that. We don't know what the arc is going to be called, and we don't know how long the arc's going to last. So should be well received, though, because Tom Taylor is definitely a writer that's in high demand because of the quality of his work. He definitely did a great job building the world of Injustice, so we'll keep our eyes out for announcements of when that's coming and what it's going to be about. Marvel announced another event coming this April, besides the Avengers standoff coming in March, and this event's going to include Spider-Gwen, Spider-Woman, and Silk, and the event's going to be called, appropriately, Spider-Women. You know, all three of those female spider-centric characters, of course, have their own titles. Just recently, this last week after New York Comic Con, a little more news about the Spider-Woman crossover was announced. It will be its own ongoing title in 2016 with a Spider-Women number one in the spring before the storyline spreads into the three ongoing titles. So looks like we'll have maybe bookend event issues with the main story taking place in the three titles. And it's going to be written by Jason Latour, Robbie Thompson, and Dennis Hopeless, who are, of course, the three series writers. No artist has been announced that I can see, but apparently what's going to happen is Spider-Woman and Silk are going to be stranded in Spider-Gwen's world, while evil doppelgangers of them bring chaos and terror to their respective cities. So, Spider-Women coming in 2016. And speaking of women, one thing DC announced at San Diego that had a lot of people excited was their DC Superhero Girls initiative. And we saw an episode debut online during New York Comic Con. Mattel and DC put on a presentation at New York Comic Con that showed the second and third episodes of DC Superhero Girls. And basically, this is a way to kind of give girls, young girls, a window into the world of DC. We've heard a lot in the last few years about diversity in comics, and we've heard complaints about why, especially on these movie tie-in toys and t-shirts and such, the women aren't featured more prominently. In fact, one of the biggest outcries was when Marvel put out a Quinjet with a motorcycle that drops down, launches out of this toy Quinjet. A very iconic scene in Avengers Age of Ultron with the Black Widow riding the motorcycle. But in the toy, it's Captain America riding the motorcycle. Look at these Avengers shirts. Black Widow's nowhere to be found. I mean, I understand from a marketing point of view why they do it. It's mostly boys, young boys who are buying this kind of stuff. But there's plenty of young girls that are fans, too. And they're asking themselves, okay, I love Guardians of the Galaxy. How come I can't find any Gamora t-shirts? How come I can't find any Gamora merchandise? There's plenty of Groot and Rocket Raccoon stuff, but where's the Gamora stuff? I'm a huge fan of the Avengers. Tons of Iron Man stuff. Thor, Captain America, Hulk, what have you. Where's my Black Widow stuff? So DC hasn't made those mistakes to the same extent. They've certainly had their missteps. But this is one thing they're doing to try to get merchandise out there for young girls to check out. So I definitely applaud their efforts. The DC Superhero Girls world, if you will, is set at Superhero High with Principal Amanda Waller. And then we have these young girls that are attending this high school. So we have Wonder Woman. We have Harley Quinn. We have Bumblebee. We have Cheetah. So definitely go and check it out. The Superhero Girls line is going to contain action figures, fashion dolls, apparel, comics, and both comics and prose books. So it's supposed to be coming spring 2016. I also should mention that Lego is going to be making some sets based in the Superhero Girls world. So there's a couple of links on a few of the news items. I put links from multiple sites because I felt that the items were important enough to warrant that. And the different articles had different information that I felt was important enough to check out. So, like I said, I know there's a lot of young girls who are very excited for this stuff to come out. So I can't wait. I know my daughter is looking forward to it. All right, and then, of course, as I mentioned, some of the biggest news to come out of New York Comic Con wasn't necessarily new news, but it was more news about Frank Miller's final entry into the Dark Knight Returns trilogy. So DC actually debuted some interior art. We know that Andy Kubert is going to be doing the art on the main part of the story, but also that each issue is going to have a smaller insert of a smaller story done by other artists. It was announced at New York Comic Con that Frank Miller and Klaus Janson are going to be collaborating on the first issue's mini comic, and that's going to be starring the Atom. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to look when the book comes out, how exactly the mini comic is going to fit, whatever. We do know that just a few weeks after each issue comes out, I believe a hardback collected edition of each issue, or at least a trade paperback kind of collector's edition, larger size book is going to come out that's going to have the mini comic in a larger size. So, again, I'm not a huge Frank Miller fan, but this is going to be, an iconic story, and there's no doubt of that. So I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode myself to see how exactly I'm going to be purchasing this. Maybe I'll wait until the entire series is done and buy everything in an oversized edition. Meanwhile, I'll just buy the digital copies as they come out weekly. I'm not really sure, but if you're looking forward to this, if you want to know what it's all about, there's tons of information out there about it. And the interior art from Adam Kubert looks outstanding. And even the mini comic from Adam, from Frank Miller and Klaus Janson starring the Atom, looks pretty good. It's much cleaner than we've seen Frank Miller's art in the past few years. So go ahead and click on the link in the show notes if you wanna check it out. Then, of course, the last item I'm going to mention also has to do with the world of The Dark Knight Returns. But it doesn't have to do with Master Race, this third story that Frank Miller is about to tell. It actually is a prequel to The Dark Knight Returns. Obviously, one of the most iconic stories that DC Comics has ever told, really changed the world of comics in 1986, along with Watchmen and, of course, The Killing Joke a little while later. Those three stories, graphic novels, collected editions, however you want to look at it or call it or whatever, really have been the best selling books for years for DC Comics as far as a graphic novel, collected edition, what have you. So we're seeing a prequel to the Dark Knight Returns story, starring that version of Batman, and it's going to be drawn by John Romita Jr. written by Frank Miller and Brian Azzarello. This is going to be a one-shot. This clearly is the reason that John Romita Jr. Was taken off of Superman, or left the Superman title that he'd worked on for almost a year, beginning with Jeff Johns as the writer on that book. So don't know what Frank Miller's going to be doing after this, if he's going to return to Superman or what he might do. But in the meantime, we do know this is what he's going to be working on. Now, I've gone on record before saying I don't care for Romita's art currently. You know, if you go back and look at his early stuff on Iron Man, I think it's really good stuff. He had his first run on Spider-Man, I felt, was decent. Also, when he was first on X-Men, it was okay. But as time has gone by, his creators have become more big and blocky, and his lines have become more thick. And I just don't care for his style of art. But I know that a lot of people consider him a very good storyteller, and they are fans of his art. So being that this is Dark Knight Returns, being that it's Romita Jr. on art, I'm sure this book will do very well. Mainly for myself, I'm curious about what the actual story will be. And it definitely seems like DC is putting a lot of support behind the world of the Dark Knight Returns coming up here in 2016. Perhaps hoping to alleviate some of that $2 million shortfall they had due to the move from New York to Burbank. So definitely exciting times. And that's going to do it for the news from New York Comic Con. Obviously, there are a lot more things mentioned and announced at New York Comic Con. I just touched on some of the highlights here. You know, Boom had some announcements. There were some other Marvel announcements, more in detail, more details, I should say, about their all new, all different titles. There was some Gotham Academy news and things like that. But like I said, I felt like these were the highlights, these are the things that stood out to me. I didn't mention any TV or movie news, although there was some. Marvel announced an Ant-Man and Wasp movie coming, for example. They shuffled their lineup of when the movies are going to be coming out, what's, you know, the order and such things. Likewise, there were some sizzle reels from a lot of the DC's shows, Gotham, Flash, of course, Legends of Tomorrow, iZombie. Over on the Marvel side of things, they showed off some Daredevil Season 2 footage. Also, the entire first episode of Jessica Jones was shown at the Jessica Jones panel. So if you want to know more about those stories, you know, Google is your friend. Google it up, you know, NYCC, and then whatever bit of news you're hoping to find information about. So that's going to do it for this episode. Once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email directly, thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can go to our website and use the Contact Us page there. The website address is thecomicsourceblog.com. You can listen to past episodes of both the Comic Source podcast and the Top Cow Chronology Project podcast on the website. You can check out Manny's blog, Family Man and His Comics. You can check out the Sketch Gallery. Once again, we want to thank everyone for your support, for taking the time to download and listen. If you want to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource is where I tweet random thoughts about comics, what I'm reading, have conversations with other creators. You can check that out. Also, if you want to follow our Facebook page, I'm always sure to notify everyone when new episodes of our podcast are out through Facebook. So just do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook, and that's us. Any comments, questions, suggestions, we love to hear from our listeners. So don't hesitate to reach out to us, and we'll talk to you next time.